Nehemiah chapter 5. Now the men and their wives raised a great outcry against their Jewish brothers. Some were saying, "We and our sons and daughters are numerous. In order for us to eat and stay alive, we must get grain." Others were saying, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine." Still others were saying, "We have had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and vineyards. Although we are of the same flesh and blood as our countrymen, and though our sons are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. Some of our daughters have already been enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." When I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. I pondered them in my mind and then accused the nobles and officials. I told them, "You are exacting usury from your own countrymen." So I called together a large meeting to deal with them and said, "As far as possible, we have bought back our Jewish brothers who were sold to the Gentiles. Now you are selling your brothers, only for them to be sold back to us." They kept quiet because they could find nothing to say. So I continued, "What you are doing is not right. Shouldn't you walk in the fear of our God to avoid the reproach of our Gentile enemies? I and my brothers and my men are also lending the people money and grain, but let the exacting of usury stop. Give back to them immediately their fields, vineyards, olive groves and houses, and also the usury you are charging them, the hundredth part of the money, grain, new wine and oil." "We will give it back," they said, "and we will not demand anything more from them. We will do as you say." Then I summoned the priests and the nobles and officials to take an oath to do what they had promised. I also shook out the folds of my robe and said, "In this way, may God shake out of his house and possessions every man who does not keep this promise. So may such a man be shaken out and emptied." At this, the whole assembly said, "Amen," and praised the Lord. And the people did as they had promised. Moreover, from the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, until his 32nd year, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allotted to the governor. But the earlier governors, those preceding me, placed a heavy burden on the people and took 40 shekels of silver from them, in addition to food and wine. Their assistants also lorded it over the people. But out of reverence for God, I did not act like that. Instead, I devoted myself to the work on the wall. All my men were assembled there for the work. We did not acquire any land. Furthermore, 150 Jews and officials ate at my table, as well as those who came to us from the surrounding nations. Each day, one ox, six choice sheep, and some poultry were prepared for me, and every 10 days, an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. In spite of all this, I never demanded the food allotted to the governor, because the demands were heavy on these people. Remember me with favour, O my God, for all I have done for these people.
So as we gradually move through the book of Nehemiah, we've now reached chapter 5. And as we've read over the past few weeks, the walls of Jerusalem are progressing nicely. Having reached the halfway point a couple of weeks ago, they're now progressing on towards completion. And the people of Israel are also progressing nicely too. Having overcome the opposition of their enemies, of Sanballat, of Tobiah, of the Arabs, of the Ammonites, and of the people of Ashdod, it seems they've now found renewed belief in God. So the walls are progressing nicely, and the people of Israel have found renewed belief. All is going well. And yet, as we reach chapter 5, Nehemiah is faced with a new problem. Having overcome a powerful king and foreign enemies, and a lack of resources and an apathetic people, Nehemiah's life, it seems, is not going to be easy. There's not going to be a let-up in what he has to deal with. And he now faces an internal problem, a problem that's coming not from outside, but from within the people of God themselves. And as you probably all know, this is not a new thing. Read any part of the Old Testament or hear a story, and you'll realise that the people of God are always having problems. And most of these problems actually are caused by themselves. In fact, look around today and you'll probably see a similar picture. A lot of the problems we have are caused by ourselves. This is not new. And it's not surprising either. But what is surprising in this book, the book of Nehemiah, is how Nehemiah responds to this new problem. Because when faced with this internal problem, with this self-inflicted issue that has arisen, Nehemiah, for the first time in the entire book, becomes angry. As David read in verse 6, when I heard that outcry and these charges, I was very angry. Nehemiah becomes angry. Now, this is not unusual. I mean, we all get angry, even though you're not angry today. We all get angry at some point. But the fact is that throughout the first four chapters of this book, the time when Nehemiah was faced with arguably the worst pressure, with enemies, with disbelief, with real physical danger, Nehemiah never got angry. He never got angry. Lots of other people got angry. Sanballat and Tobiah got angry. The other enemies got angry. Even the people of God got angry. Some of them refused to work the walls. But the one who wrote this book, Nehemiah himself, never gets angry. He feels lots of other emotions, like we talked about earlier. He feels fear, and he feels grief, and he feels regret, and he feels sorrow. But he never feels anger until chapter 5. I mean, I know, for instance, if I'd have been in his situation, I would have felt anger way before then. With the situation, with the people, I would have become very frustrated, to say the least. But Nehemiah doesn't. Now, either he's a patient person who can withstand lots of things, there are those people around, or he chose not to write that he was angry because he wrote the book. Maybe he just skipped a few bits. Missed out his anger. Or maybe the truth is that he had not yet faced a situation which had pushed his buttons. Maybe he had not yet faced a situation which had actually triggered that anger. Because the truth is, we all get angry at different things, don't we? I mean, maybe like Nehemiah, we're the type of people who genuinely don't get angry when we're surrounded by people who dislike us and are trying to stop what we're doing. Maybe that doesn't bother us at all. Maybe we don't get angry when people scare us or frustrate what we want to do. Maybe we don't get angry when we've sacrificed what we like and the way we live for other people and they don't seem to appreciate it. Maybe that doesn't bother us. Maybe we don't get angry when lots of people expect a lot from us, but they give very little in return. Maybe we can let that go. Maybe like Nehemiah, these kind of things, these bigger issues, they don't bother us. We're generally laid back, patient people who let the world just go by. Or maybe it's not those things. Maybe it's more the little things that get to us. The personal things which keep niggling at us. Ongoing situations which are just bubbling under the surface. Maybe it's family, maybe it's friends, maybe it's work colleagues. Maybe these things get us angry. What is it, when we think about it, that really makes us angry? Because just like Nehemiah, we eventually do have our angry moments. Whether it's infrequently or every couple of days, there's something which triggers us. Personally, It's those talk shows on the radio. They really get me angry. I can't listen to them while I'm driving, because I get mad. But there's lots of things. You have your little sheet with anger written on it for a specific reason. What is it that makes you angry? You don't have to show this to anyone, so you know, you don't have to write the right things down. What is it that makes you angry? What are those things which push your buttons? Have a little think. Jot down what it is. Or there's probably many things. There's many things for me. Write down. Could be specifics or could be underlying things that continue on. What is it that makes you angry? Feel free to chat to someone next to you if you prefer to do that. Don't have to just sit on your own and jot it down. I looked up what makes the people angry. 10 things. What's the top 10 things that make people angry? You might have some of these on your bit of paper, I don't know. At number 10, people had put, what makes them angry is people who drive like idiots. That was on the list. That was number 10. I was quite surprised at that. I thought it might be a bit higher. At number 9, for what makes people angry, it's people who text message while having a conversation with you. That makes quite a lot of people angry. That was at number 9. Number 8... was people talking during a film in the cinema. That makes people angry. Well, I was in the cinema once, and 2 people started having a fight at the front. There was a fight on the screen, and then there was a real-life fight. I didn't know which one to watch. It was quite exciting. At number 7 of what makes people angry is the companies where you have to go through like a million different buttons on the phone before you actually get to speak to a real person. That makes people... Oh, you're nodding. Add that one to the list, Rob. That makes you angry, yes. Oh, different one. Another one. At number 6, what makes people angry is people who smoke. That makes people angry. At number 5, what people... This made me giggle. I'm sorry, it's childish. Was people who pass wind in a crowded elevator. That makes people angry. At number 5, that was above people who drive like idiots. I know. What are the chances of that? Number 4, gossip. That makes people angry. Do you think people lied about this little survey? At number 3, for what makes people angry, is large cars have just one driver, no passengers. I wouldn't notice. Number 2, people who are rude. People are rude, that makes people angry. And at number 1, the number 1 thing that makes people angry is themselves. People get angry at themselves. At the fact that they can't do things, at the fact that they do things wrong, at the fact that they get angry. They get angry that they get angry. They get angry at themselves. That was number 1 on the list. I'm sure if you asked other people, there'd be plenty of others. I'm sure if we did a top 10... we'd get a different one. But there's so many differences. Anything can make us angry, depending on how we feel. Rob Bell says that there is a response to anger that's essentially all about us. Our pride, our ego, all of the ways we work so hard to prop up and protect and defend our selfish little kingdoms. But with Jesus, it was different. Jesus identified himself with a injustice larger than himself. There is something divine about his anger, because some things are worth getting angry about. And here in the book of Nehemiah himself could have got angry about all sorts of things. He could have got angry because people upset him, because people disagreed with him, because people tried to hurt him, because people were disrespectful to him, because they were. He could have got angry because God had chosen him for this awful task when he'd had a perfectly good job back in Babylon.
But he didn't. Because Nehemiah was not there to build his own kingdom and protect his ego. He was in Jerusalem to build the kingdom of God. And so when he gets angry, it's with something that's bigger than himself. It's when people are being treated unjustly. And interestingly, he's one of the people who's treating others unjustly. And so he does something about it. And you know, in contrast, it's interesting, isn't it, that the things that often make us angry directly affect us. Bad drivers, unthinking window shoppers, things that annoy us and irritate us. The things that often make us angry have nothing to do with God's divine anger, as Rob Bell was saying. But the thing is, as the people of God, if we want to lead the way in society, which is what God calls us to do, he doesn't call us to just sit and enjoy church and enjoy the things on a Sunday. He calls us to lead the way in society, to be different, to show people how the world should be. And yet all we see the church getting angry about is things on the telly, or things that happen in theatres, or things that upset us and we think, well, that's not right. Whereas God calls us to get angry about people who are dying, about poverty, about lives that are wrecked and ruined. But we easily watch that go by. And we get angry when a television programme says something wrong about the church or about God. And so people ignore us. Because in the grand scheme of things, that really doesn't matter. What matters is broken lives. And God has called us to be a people who get angry about that and then do something about it. A people who build his kingdom. Not our own little kingdoms, but his kingdom where we live. Nehemiah got angry, but only when it really mattered. Maybe as the people of God today, we should seek to do the same. Let's just spend a moment in silence as we think about what we've listened to, what we've heard, what makes us angry, where we sit with the whole issue of anger. Are we those people who have an underlying rage that is easily triggered? Or do we channel our anger and turn it into something good and positive?